The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way. Where old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
First of all, are we recording right now?
Yeah.
Oh, we are. Sorry.
I think we just got lost in the initial conversation.
Yeah. No, I was...
Dave's rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a closer look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, and some albums you may not know even existed. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins. And on this episode of Abandoned Albums, we have a very special treat. We're going to give you a preview of our brand new, shiny, spanking podcast called Generation Riff. I'm not even going to go into that much detail for you. I'm just going to slide this little doohickey here and let you guys listen to a little sample. Oops. Sorry about that. That's not the right one. So let's try it again. I'm going to take this little lever, slide it over here, and now here's a sample of the Generation Riff podcast.
Welcome to the Generation Riff podcast, where you'll hear writers discuss their work chronicling your favorite bands and musicians. Join me, Rob Janicki, alongside Keith R. Higgins, in the Thunder Love Cafe, as we share conversation, stories, and some pretty damn good coffee with writers from around the globe. Today, Keith and I are joined by writer Jim Ruland. Jim's books include Do What You Want, The Story of Bad Religion, My Damage, Keith Morris, The Story of a Punk Rock Survivor, and his latest book, Corporate Rock Sucks, The Rise and Fall of SST Records. So why don't you join the three of us in the Thunder Love Cafe? Order up yourself your favorite cup of coffee, and let's rock.
It took a while for me to kind of totally commit to it. I remember hearing Dead Kennedys for the first time, and I was like, what is this? It's not for me.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on what you grew up hearing and loving. I found punk probably the way a lot of kids in New York did. The Ramones, The Clash, or even though The Clash aren't obviously from New York or the States, but that genre of punk. And then, because I'm so close to Manhattan, all the hardcore stuff in the 80s I got turned on to, because CBGBs and Continental and all the clubs that were, you know, doing the matinees and stuff, they kind of sucked me in a little bit. And so I had a little bit of exposure that way.
Have you always been a writer?
No, I was not. I've not always been a writer. I think it was an early dream of mine, and I love books. But my utter failure in the classroom and all the trouble I got into while I was in the Navy kind of convinced me that would not be a wise path for me. And it wasn't until I got to college, finally, and started writing about some of my experiences in the Navy and my, you know, introduction to freshman composition class, where, and my teacher was like, this is great, you should do more of this. It's like, really?
It's always great when somebody acknowledges your writing, your creative output.
Well, I mean, it really helps to feel like you're good at something, no matter what it is you do in this world. But I came out of the Navy pretty well convinced I wasn't good at anything except getting in trouble. So I didn't really have any confidence. I think I was like a computer science major when I started school, which I was completely not cut out for. But yeah, then I discovered literature and books and writing, and the path revealed itself.
Seems like it landed you in the right spot, because not only the book that we are going to talk about today, but you know, you've got a really nice collection of writings. I haven't read all of them yet, but I plan on it. So I guess, you know, well, first of all, thank you. Thanks for dedicating some time to us today and coming on and talking about your latest book. So I guess maybe we can start there and talk about where the book came from, the idea. I mean, just talk about it a little bit, if you will, about, you know, why you wrote it and, you know, why it was interesting to you to write it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it wasn't my idea to write this book. It was something that was presented to me, and I was pretty sure it was a terrible idea because, you know, I had written this book with Keith, and there was like a lot of off-the-record comments or things that we did not use in his book, My Damage, about what he had said about Greg Ginn and SST. So his feelings were very clear to me on the subject, and I wasn't going to embark on a project without his blessing. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, loyal to Keith first and foremost, but he said, no, go for it. And that project ended up not working out. So I took it to my publishers that I'd worked with at My Damage and Do What You Want. And off we went.
I wonder if when you're approached with a question like that or a project and you weren't really sure that it was going to be the right fit, was it Keith's blessing that just kind of gave you the, you know, the push to say, okay, I'll do this, even though it wasn't the initial thought?
Well, it was a couple things, but a big part of it was the experience of having written that book with Keith. And even though it was a memoir and not something that I did tons of research for, it's, you know, it's his story, right? Mm-hmm. In his voice. But around 2000 or 1999, around the time that I started, when Flipside fanzine folded and Razor Cake started up, two zines that I've written for, mm-hmm. I moved to the South Bay. I moved to LA South Bay. I moved to Manhattan Beach, which is just about a mile north of Hermosa Beach. And if you spend any time in that area and you're interested in punk at all, you're going to soak up the lore of the place. You're going to learn about the church where Black Flag rehearsed. You're going to learn about the Strand, you know, that Keith sings about. And it's the Strand that connects, you know, the beach cities, you know, for people on their skateboards and their bike. And that's one of the first things I did was buy a skateboard and tool around the Strand. So it just kind of seeps in. And, you know, like Pollywog Park was a real big one for me that stuck out. That was a park in Manhattan Beach where Black Flag had an infamous show in 1979. And it was infamous because the picnickers, you know, threw food at the band. And it was kind of a disaster, but it was also all in good fun. But when the press wrote about it the following week in the local paper, it was described as a riot, which it definitely was not a riot. You know, the Black Flag's friends came to see the band, and it was one of those events that people from all over Southern California came to see and was there, one of those watershed moments in Southern California hardcore. But the people who were there were expecting something more mellower. They were throwing things, but it's not like anyone threw anything back. It's not like it wasn't the punks throwing things, right? So the whole thing was kind of misconstrued from the beginning, and that set a really confrontational vibe between Black Flag and Hermosa Beach authorities. But one detail about that show is that it was on July 22nd, which happens to be my birthday. So in a really goofy way that you kind of attach added significance to things that happen on your birthday, it just stuck out in my memory and was like, made me more curious about, you know, the roots of Black Flag, which is synonymous with the story of SST. So having had those experiences and knowing that the South Bay is a part of LA, but also apart from it, it's very different, very distinctive. I like to joke around that when you see someone who's from there in Hollywood, you can kind of pick them out. There's just a different kind of vibe. And so that gave me a little bit of courage to take on this task, just because although I was not part of the SST inside circle, I had a list of emails that Keith had given me and phone numbers, and that was about it. I didn't really know anyone else at the label. I wasn't friends with any of those people. I didn't have any extra access or any reason to think that anyone would talk to me other than I was down for it.
Jim has more stories where that came from, so be sure to tune in tomorrow, Thursday, May 19th at 6 p.m. when the inaugural episode of Generation Riff drops. And there are the birds telling me it's the end of the episode. Abandoned Albums was recorded on location at... Rufus, do you have to? Abandoned Albums was recorded on location at Thunder Love Studios.
Produced and written by Keith R. Higgins.
Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley. Edited by A.J. Royce.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and follow us on social media. At Twitter, we are at Abandoned Albums. And on Instagram, we are at Abandoned_albums.
As always, thanks to Rob Janicki, S.W. Loudon, Nathan Sage, Steve Beasley, Mike Pellegrino, Therina Bella, and of course, our executive producer, Rufus Thunderlove.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Station Road, LLC.